This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me Tan Chun Hang and Kusu Chuang with the top business headlines of the day. We have a look at a range of stories Han.
Yeah. Well, starting with oil prices here, overnight it gained almost 2%. It's Brent futures here. We're talking about global oil prices now hovering below that $52 a barrel mark. Now, if you recall, not too long ago, it was below $50 a barrel. So there has been this surge of late. And this comes on the back of comments by both Saudi Arabia and also Russia saying that perhaps, well, there is the intention, the will to extend those production cuts into the first quarter of 2018. Isn't that right, Chuang?
Yeah, that's right. So that's why Brent and West Texas both spiked to nearly $52 a barrel, respectively. But interesting, because these cuts are postulated to extend to January 2018. OPEC, as well as I think the Russians in totality, spell about roughly 1.8 million barrels of cuts collectively. And the whole intention, I think, on a group basis is to address the inventory buildup that's happened in our oil supplies, which has been the one reason that it's pressured oil prices in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so despite the intentions by both OPEC and also non-OPEC members, they have to look at what's happening with U.S. shale, right? Because they have seen, you know, how inventories over there, because of the shale output, you know, they've been adding to the global oversupply, you know. So you have that element going on. But even within the OPEC context, you do have members who have been deemed as rogue members, where they're not necessarily going along with these production cuts. You got the likes of Iraq, for example. They have been exempted by it, you know, so because their rationale is this: they should not be having to adhere to these production cuts because they need the money to then battle ISIS, right? So you have that going on. Also, you've got comments from the likes of Kazakhstan. They say they are not sure as to how they're going to go about, you know, with these production cuts, you know, whether they'll go along with this. So we have to wait and see.
So what I understand is there's been a high level of compliance in the first iteration of this compact between both OPEC and non-OPEC producing nations. What is starting to put pressure on that consensus? I mean, why is it starting to fray at the corners?
Okay, a couple of things. So, number one, this production cut deal has been in place since January, right? Yet, despite that higher than expected compliance from OPEC and also non-OPEC members, Malaysia included, yet you're still seeing the recovery in oil prices, you know, being sluggish. You know, as it stands, even after, what, 4 or 5 months of these production cuts, oil prices are still at the low end of $50 a barrel, right? So you have that. Also, Saudi Arabia points to the inventory numbers. They say it's not at the levels that we need it to be, right? So hence, there's been plenty of talk about them possibly extending this production cut into the first quarter of this year. Keep in mind, May 25th, OPEC members will be meeting in Vienna, so we'll see what the outcome is, or what the outcome will be then.
Well, the big producers like the Saudis, they've been staring down the barrel for the last couple of years in terms of where their income's coming. So they're caught between the devil and a hard place. Either they lose market share to the American shale producers, or they basically lose income from plunging oil prices. So I think they've made the call. They will be cutting production. And Citigroup, interestingly, says that it could be as much as a 70% chance that OPEC and their partners could cut production by another 300,000 to 500,000 barrels of oil per day. So that's interesting.
Yeah, so they'll bring it to above 2 million barrels per day. You know, we'll wait and see. So, I mean, essentially, how does this tie into, you know, those of you listening in your cars right now? Perhaps brace for higher prices, higher RON 95 prices, you know, in the coming months.
We'll okay, so what, from one global addiction to another, in our crosshairs, sugar. Han.
All right. What, you calling me sugar now? Hey, sugar, calm down.
No, I'm calling you Han.
Wrong show, buddy.
Honey.
Anyways, we've got talks now in the papers by MSM Malaysia. Apparently, they are in talks with the government, the Malaysian government, to increase sugar prices here in Malaysia. If you recall, back in March of this year, sugar prices were already hiked by about 11 cents per kg, up to about 2 ringgit and 95 cents. $0.50 per kg. But that wasn't the full quantum of what MSM wanted. They actually wanted another, another 29 cent on top, right? So it should have been 40 cent hike in total, right?
Yeah, sugar's been a control item in Malaysia for a lot of years. And even if FGV and MSM specifically get their increase, the price per kilogram of sugar will be around about $3.24, which is still about 60 to 70 cents cheaper than Thailand and Indonesia, so according to our research. So there is kind of like a proposition, kind of like how like Tenaga Nasional used to have a proposition, quite a good, well-based one, to raise tariffs, as in this case, as sugar. The other dimension that has to be mentioned as well is because Malaysia is the most obese, if not one of the most obese nations in ASEAN and the region. So there is a health bill to be paid for as well. And the health ministry, if not the biggest, I think next to education, is one of the most expensive ministries to run. So there is a health bill perspective here.
Yeah, in fact, we just spoke to the Minister of Health on precisely these questions. I know, Chuang, and you and some other people believe that maybe sugar consumption is elastic, meaning as the price rises, demand will fall. But, you know, when you look at some cultural habits, there might be quite a bit of inelasticity when it comes to the question of consuming sugar, you know, whether it's, you know, in your condensed milk or in the now all the rage, you know, cupcakes and stuff.
You can point to the same argument with tobacco. I mean, look at where tobacco prices are. They've never been higher, and people are still smoking.
Well, we do have the problem of illegal cigarettes,
correct,
right? Yeah. So that undercuts the ability for policy and pricing to have a real material effect on consumption habits. If we had plugged that hole with the illegal cigarettes, maybe you would see a sharp decline or a significant decline in smoking.
Well, back to sugar. If from a policy perspective, it's about a health bill, then shouldn't this directive come from the health ministry, not necessarily from MSM? Because when you analyze it, why is this, what resembles a policy initiative, come from company level? And then you all kinds of questions asked, because when you analyze the financials of MSM, as well as its 51% parent FGV, they're both bleeding money. So people are suspicious as a result, justifiably.
Right. I mean, obviously, you know, we're trying to give you different perspectives here. So on one hand, yeah, Chuang, you're right to point out, you know, there is that national agenda. There is that policy level whereby the government, you know, has to look out for the greater good, you know. While on the other hand, at the other extreme of the equation, another part of this equation would be us end users, right? Can Malaysians then, you know, well, do we have the ability to absorb these higher, potentially higher food prices, right? So we have that agenda as well. But when you look at the company level, though, MSM Malaysia, their net profit in 2016 fell by more than half compared to what they saw in 2015. 2015 net profit came in about 275 million ringgit. Last year, down to about 120 million ringgit. So they're having to contend with falling net profit. Now, we have a clip here from FGV Group President and CEO, Dato Zakaria Arshad. I mean, real quick, FGV is a 51%, owns about 51% in MGM. And here's their stance at the company level on sugar prices.
Government should increase the selling price per kilo, but now government only allow us to increase only 11 cents. So we have to look into the market how to get back 29 cents we supposed to get. In fact, in Malaysia, actually we are the lowest selling sugar price in this region. Even Thailand, who are producing sugar, they are much higher than us. They are selling 4 ringgit something. So it's very challenging for us if government doesn't increase the sugar price.
Yeah. Coming back, so the substance, if I remember correctly, of one of these things, one of the things points he was making was that if you put Malaysia in comparative perspective, you look at the region, we actually have very low sugar levels. And I think this is sometimes...
Consumption, judging by our
price levels.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is an argument that's often made when we... Remember that argument over oil subsidies, petroleum subsidies? You know, using a comparative perspective, allowing Malaysians to understand that, in fact, the situation, it was not as bad as we thought. We always think of ourselves as victims. In this case, what is our level? What is the level of sugar across the region?
Well, yeah, so I think Chuang raised this earlier on as well. So when you look, well, according to our initial research, you've got Indonesia, they are selling sugar at about 4 ringgit and 45 cent per kg, I believe. And according to FGV, you know, Thailand is selling their sugar at above 4 ringgit per kg, you know, if you convert it. Whereas right now, as it stands, here in Malaysia, sugar is below 3 ringgit per kg. So perhaps there's a bit more headroom there to raise sugar prices if we are using the region's prices as a benchmark.
Well, there is a larger issue here because sugar notwithstanding, Malaysia has been spoiled with cheap water, cheap petrol, cheap, a lot of things. So by removing, cheapish cigarettes until recently in a way, so by removing these subsidies and dismantling these subsidies, which are expensive to the government and can't afford it, then people will be weaned off these addictions, right?
But, the cost for governments, democratic governments, depend on legitimacy through elections. It's always going to be a difficult thing, especially when you come into election season,
right,
to impose higher costs on your potential voter. Mm. And I think that's something that the politicians are going to be keeping an eye on as well.
Exactly. So whether our listeners right now and Malaysian voters at large, whether they can, refrain from saying, yes, higher sugar prices or this kind of pseudo punitive tax, although it's not really a tax, but higher sugar prices, is good for the national agenda. That way we don't have to pay more for the health bill, and that way we can reduce our consumption of sugar. Whether that kind of storyline gains traction among Malaysian voters, that is going to be a really, really tough sell, right? Especially in the lead up to GE14. Now, real quick, why are we talking about all this? Perhaps rising oil prices, the potential of higher sugar prices. Now, this is rather timely because by noon tomorrow, Wednesday, May 17th, we've got April's inflation data due. Now, this is something that we've been talking a lot on this show, right? When we saw inflation figures back in March, Chuang, I believe it was an 8-year high, 5.1%. Economists whom we speak to, they say it's come off slightly, but if we have to contend with perhaps rising prices at the pump, perhaps rising sugar prices, what is that going to do to headline inflation?
We're going to come back with more analysis of the business news after the bulletin. Of course, also the opening numbers in the stock market. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.